Professor Peter Frost and Professor Frank Catano. They are professors engaged in research around a topic, and this is kind of interesting today, right? Not because conspiracy theories are new, but we seem to talk about them more and more, especially with the advent of social media. Cognitive biases associated with conspiracies, conspiracy theory belief. Professors, thanks for joining us this morning. Great subject.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
How many, by the way, before we begin, how many years, each of you, have you been part of the team at Southern Hampshire University?
About 20 now.
Yeah, I think I've been here. Oh, I beat you, 21.
21, yeah. Dr. Frost teaches psychology, and I teach sociology, so we come at this from two different sides.
All right, now you're going to talk about some of the psychological predispositions that or traits that might make some people more susceptible to a conspiracy theory. But before we begin, it's interesting. I grew up, if I ever grew up, north of Boston. And I remember in high school, Swampscott High School on the North Shore, the Zapruder films and the whole, you know, post-Kennedy assassination, of course, Boston, JFK, big subject. And I just remember being a young person before majoring in political science in college and doing some stuff after, or doing what I've done over the years in the political media side of things in my show is, you know, just wondering, and there are still documentaries and questions to this day. Who was really behind? What were the forces behind JFK? Was it a single shot? Was it Oswald? How did Ruby get to Oswald and kill him? Was it the CIA? Was it the mob? Who was it? And it's interesting because I can see why that one, despite predisposed dispositions or traits, would stand the test of time. But today, it seems like everyone's got a conspiracy theory. So what are some of the sort of the psychological side or background of this? And I'm going to let you both run with this.
Oh, sure. So I think today, you know, with social media and everything like that, it used to be that when people would hold a conspiracy theory belief and you share it, people would kind of give you a funny look, especially if it's a conspiracy theory that's unfounded and obviously far off from what many of us would agree is based on reality. But now, when you go on to social media,
right?
You go on the internet, now we're talking, you know, like, let's say you believe in there are actually lizard people,
right.
Masquerading as humans, but they're really lizards.
Right.
Only the latest estimate is that only 4% of people believe in that. But if you go on the internet and social media, even just considering this country alone, where you have 300 million people, you take 4% of people believing that, that's 12 million people. And so it used to be that, so in other words, I think people feel more emboldened now,
yeah,
to share their conspiracy theory beliefs, even if it's pretty far afield from reality.
Yeah. And from the social side or the cultural side, because of social media, you can get in touch with more like-minded people in real time.
Yeah.
And when I look at the patterns of our society, which is one of the elements of conspiracy theory, what you see is you're in a cultural period of moral confusion. People don't know what or who to believe.
Right.
So they tend to go down these rabbit holes. Occasionally, some of them have evidence, but most of them don't. So and right now you could argue politically and socially, we are in a period of great moral confusion. People don't know who to believe.
Right.
Trust in government, trust in corporations is dwindling.
Trust in our institutions. Yeah, trust in our institutions is dwindling. Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, and you're listening to Professor Peter Frost, Professor Frank Catano, Southern Hampshire University, one on the psychology side, one on the sociology side. What about, let me go back to this, what motivates conspiracy theory belief? In other words, does it sort of fulfill a purpose today?
Yeah, I do you want to take that first?
Oh, you could go.
Okay, from a sociology perspective, what motivates people are perhaps loss and fear, okay? And the loss could be of the people they want elected to office. The loss could be of jobs and careers because jobs have moved out of the country,
mm-hmm,
or the loss of prestige of the country. Whatever perceived losses or fears they have, they are magnified in our culture. So that would kind of motivate them to find people, because they don't want to be wrong. They mm-hmm. they want to find people who have similar identities that they can share these ideas with.
And one of you go ahead. Go ahead, Professor. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. I was just going to say that, definitely the fear and uncertainty. I think during the time when we were going through an epidemic, there was so much uncertainty around what was happening and fear. So I think that definitely fueled that to some extent. I also think there's multiple reasons why people get called in or feel like their calling is to follow conspiracy theory. One is that, it could be fear, but it could also be that a person feels an existential crisis. They need more meaning in their life and more excitement. We actually have seen research where the more exciting a conspiracy theory is, the more likely it is that people will believe in it. And it's exciting. You have these little crumbs of evidence that people pick up on the internet and through social media, and it gives their lives some excitement. You also gain some social support because you're part of this conspiracy theory community.
Right.
So there's a lot of allure to that, but the question I want your listeners to consider is this going to pay off in the long run? In the short run, there's excitement. There may be answers that maybe allay fears, but will that pay off in the long run?
Right.
And to follow up on that, there's also what I consider maybe a negative side of this, and that is that a lot of people have weaponized misinformation and disinformation in social, political, and even economic areas to get what they want. So there's a purposeful building of misinformation to motivate or get people to act.
Professor, the sad thing is, or the reality is, social media makes it worse. One of you talked about like the deep silo that people will run in on a little bit, like just a few crumbs of information. The other thing is it's both sides of the political spectrum. You know, a lot of people want to make it about one, but, you know, you can say on both sides of the political spectrum, these things are fueled. Let me ask you this on the psychology of this. Is some of this you sort of thrown out there on purpose to almost control people or not?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's some evidence. And I appreciate your point that it's both sides of the political spectrum. We've seen conspiracy theories on both sides. And we actually teach a course on this, and we will be teaching a course on the sociology and psychology of conspiracy theory. And it's certainly the case that people, follow these conspiracy theories in a way to make themselves feel better about what's happening and feel like they have some measure of control. But yeah, there's definitely evidence that people are using it deliberately. Like they know it. It's been in the news lately that even some, people provide editorial will say one thing, but then, they'll say behind the scenes privately something very different. So it's to me sad when people use conspiracy theory as a recruiting tool to try to get people to follow there. In some cases, you could argue it's a cult.
Yeah. And if you follow like marketing and advertising, what you end up with is every time you present something, you have to up the ante. You have to make it bigger and better to keep people's attention. Yeah. So the conspiracy theories that are expounded get broader and wilder. And still, some people will believe that.
Yeah, you want the likes.
You know, it's interesting. I bet your students love this subject, and if you can keep it the way you're presenting it, because I think the dangerous thing would be to teach this with a certain perspective, because then you're falling into the trap of what you're talking about, trying to get someone into a conclusion versus just talking about this. Because I think I mentioned the JFK assassination. You know, we could talk about Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Jr. But also, I just was reading recently that Jimmy Carter, one-term president, when he was dealing with the Iran, the hostage situation and running again before Ronald Reagan came along, that, John Connally was a powerful political figure. And there are conspiracy theories. Did Conley or one of his folks go to the Middle East and convince a lot of those leaders to not release the hostages before the election to kind of hurt Carter? Again, Washington is full of conspiracy theories. You look at all the questions around President Kennedy with the CIA and Dulles and the FBI, and then, of course, you know, Cuba, organized crime, gambling. I mean, some of these are legitimate. And then some are just crazy. I mean, yeah. Some conspiracy theories. And what do you both say in a rational, civic, respectful conversation of someone who believes an incredibly unsubstantiated conspiracy theory? And it could be, you know, about aliens, you know, living in Maine or something. And they just really believe it and they perpetuate it. How do you handle that? Because sometimes you can't talk to anyone about anything if they don't agree. You don't say what they want to hear.
No, I guess having personal experience both with friends and family members who have gone down these routes, I might say to somebody, hey, let's agree to disagree and stay friends.
Right.
Especially if you run into the problem where they're not going to be subject to reason. If somebody is subject to reason, I'll ask them to show me evidence. And you kind of said it yourself. The big difference is, a conspiracy has evidence. A conspiracy theory does not yet have evidence. So if you don't have evidence, I'm gonna say, well, it might be plausible, but until you show me evidence, I really can't entertain it.
Now let me ask both you a question, because maybe your students will do this, and I love the take on this, because this is a course I would sign up for, by the way, if I was in college again. are there any fun, good conspiracy theories that you both or one of you actually, and it might be historic. I mean, there have been, let's face it, there are conspiracy theories that have lasted thousands of years, right? You know, whether you want to talk on some religious conspiracy theories, the Vatican, world wars. I mean, we could go way back. Are there any good ones that you think are healthy versus unhealthy?
Well, it's funny you ask that. One of the challenges we gave to our students was to anybody in the course would get an automatic A if they could prove a conspiracy theory. So we had one student make up a conspiracy theory in which both of us were mermaids. And they basically had a picture of our faces on a mermaid's body. And the students took a vote and confirmed that it was true. So that was fun. So there are fun, good ones. But most of those are just more local, and they're more like in-house jokes, so to speak.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say I really appreciated your point that we need to when you teach a course like this, you can't, you know, shame people and say, hey, you're wrong, because then I'm going to be imposing my own belief system onto them. But from a psychological standpoint, we always ask, why, you know, like, why do you have that belief, or why do people have this belief? And even some of the sillier ones, why do people have the belief? Like, I guess some of my favorite conspiracy theories, or at least they're kind of silly and kind of easy to talk about, would be how it seems like when it comes to pop stars, the people who are alive are really dead. Like, or the ones who are dead are really alive. Like Elvis is still alive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there are people that say that they've seen Hitler in Argentina, you know, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of movies touch upon these things in a way to get your attention, but people run with them. Like Men in Black with the aliens. There was one line in it that a former basketball player was accused of being an alien. And the line was, well, gee, he's not really got a great disguise. Mm-hmm. And so people laugh at that stuff, but it's humorous, but it does feed into that mentality.
Go ahead. Final point. We got to run.
Sure. Just real quick. I think it's also kind of fun to talk about those because it's low stakes and you get into the why behind it. Like, why do people believe certain people, especially pop stars who've died from drug overdose, they want to believe they're still alive, they're under the witness protection program. But when you get into the why, it's people, you know, for example, don't want to believe that their favorite singers are,
right,
you know, died because of a drug overdose or something like
that. That's great. You know what? Great chorus. I love it. One of our best segments we've ever done in terms of, I think, hitting buttons that I love, because I, you know, it's funny. If you were to ask your students or me, and I'll let you go, professors, but thank you, our Penman Pride segment, are you a conspiracy theorist? In other words, do you believe in a conspiracy theory if it has some legs to it? And I don't even know how I would answer that myself, because I talk a lot in the show about this, because today there's so many crazy, you know, theories out there. I don't discount something, because I guess nothing would surprise me. I mean, we've had naval pilots, fighter pilots, and I'm a big fan of the military recently, really say, look, at what I saw up there is not man-made. There have been hearings in Congress about it, but yet we still have questions. So I don't discount them, but I know one thing. I don't look for them. So we appreciate what you this is a great subject.
Well, thank you. I would argue that the real conspiracies out there are the ones that aren't talked about and that people don't regularly see.
Right.
But they are out there. They're smaller. They're well-funded. They have specific purposes.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean they're bad.
Right. It's just it is what it is, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Professor.
Take your course.
Yeah, I'll come over. Professor Frost and Frank Catano, thank you both very much. Penn McPride, Southern Hampshire University, thank you.
Thank you very much. You enjoyed this.